Welcome to Out of the Question, a podcast that looks behind some common questions and uncovers the question behind the question while providing real solutions for biblical world and life view. Your host is Andrea Schwartz, a teacher and mentor and founder of the Chalcedon Teacher Training Institute.
Early in November, as I customarily do, I attended the local Pregnancy Resource Center's fundraiser, the name of which is Real Options. This is an annual event that I have shared with my husband, along with my children, and specifically my son and his family, for more than 10 years. This year, my two teenaged granddaughters, who've grown up attending these events, listened along with me to the keynote speaker, Rebecca Hagen, who's my guest today. Rebecca had a message for all in attendance, but sitting between my granddaughters, I could see that she was really resonating with them. She told her story of becoming pregnant while still a teenager in high school and the struggle to do the right thing and not end the life of her unborn child. You can see a number of her video presentations and interviews on YouTube. The two oldest of Rebecca's children are alive today because people in her life cared enough to help her through a life and death decision for them. We'll go into her story in a bit before we talk about what I consider to be the most important message she has to share. Thanks for joining me today, Rebecca.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So please give a synopsis of your two pregnancies and how the possibility of abortion entered your mind.
So you touched on this briefly, but I'll share again that I became pregnant with my first baby at the very end of my junior year of high school. It was maybe 2 weeks or so before that senior summer. And, you know, you got all these plans. You're so excited. It's your last year. You're about to enter into adulthood. And lo and behold, I found out that I was expecting a baby. And as I mentioned at the Real Options Banquet, you know, this was not supposed to happen to a girl like me. I got pretty good grades. I was put on a very straight and narrow path. I grew up in church, and we were not casual church attendees. I mean, we were there throughout the week, involved in extracurricular activities within the church, had friends there. So not only was it not supposed to happen, and not only was I shocked, but my parents were really upset, and my dad was really shocked. And I think we, as I mentioned that evening, can get caught up thinking these types of situations don't happen in families like mine. And here we were. Now, my dad at first was angry. I won't lie to you. It was a difficult time, but thankfully his anger wore off and he offered, you know, I would call it probably reluctant support. I don't like that we're in this position, but you're our kid. We will extend grace to you now that we've calmed down. And with their help, my parents' help, I was able to choose life, to reject abortion pretty much from that moment on.
Okay, so let me stop you for a second.
Yeah.
The sequence of events were you find out you're pregnant.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you know how babies come about. So it wasn't like you woke up one day and you were pregnant. This was like you obviously had done things that precipitated that. Was your first thought, I can't go through with this? Were you abortion-minded at the outset before you told your parents?
With my first baby, I would say the term I would use would not be abortion-minded. I would say I was abortion-vulnerable. I guess what I mean by that is if someone had proposed that idea to me and spent a good bit of time telling me, hey, like, this is a good idea, this will ruin your future, I would have been vulnerable to that message. But instead, I was so, I think, naive that once my parents found out, and they found out rather quickly.
Now, did you tell them or they somehow found out?
No. In both situations, I didn't have the opportunity to tell them. They found out in kind of a roundabout way. My mom called the doctor's office needing something completely irrelevant. And the woman who answered the phone, God bless her, said, oh, there was no receipt for her copay because there's no charge for OB visits.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear is right. And I got sent straight to my room. So that happened pretty quickly after my first appointment, before any decisions had been made about what I was going to do with my pregnancy and continue being pregnant. And since the hard part was kind of over and out of my control. I just thought, as silly as it sounds, things will get better. There was hope. I mean, my dad already knew, and how much worse could it get, I guess?
Okay, so here's another question, because I'm putting myself in your shoes. And of course, if this had happened to me when I was your age, or the age you were then, abortion wasn't readily available or wasn't talked about. So I don't even know that that would have come into my mind. What usually happened with girls who got pregnant is they would get sent away to an aunt's house or this or that, and then the baby would be put up for adoption. Did you have any concerns that, like, how am I going to do my senior year? Once your parents said, okay, this is it, this is our grandbaby, we'll help you. How much of the teenage girl, what about my prom? What about my friends will say, what about the people at church? Did those thoughts go through your mind?
Yeah, they definitely went through my mind. Probably the moment I found out I was pregnant, and then there was like a lull where I think I was just kind of in a fog. And then after I chose to carry and knew I was going to be parenting and not placing for adoption, those feelings and thoughts came back. Absolutely. I was terrified at what people would think. And the thing about an unplanned pregnancy is obviously the baby is not sin. I don't want to mince words here. But you do have to walk around with a very visible example of what you've done behind closed doors. So there's no secret to
Yes.
be had when you are visibly pregnant. And that was quite embarrassing. I was terrified about what people would think. And I know that people at school, I went to a very large, uppity, well-to-do high school in Northern California. When parents would drop their kids off, they would stare. And it was almost like I had the plague or something contagious, don't go near her. And so it was super embarrassing. And the kids at school didn't know what to think. You're walking around and you start to show and you've got a belly and you're not supposed to. And it's bizarre for them. And it was just incredibly embarrassing. Yes, I was worried about what my church would think. I went to a very small, very conservative Southern Baptist church, probably had maximum, 150, 200 people. Everybody knew everyone. And that was terrifying. All of it was embarrassing. And unlike you, I grew up in a time where sending your child off to, say, a maternity home was not the norm. And so there I was at home, and I begged my mom to do some type of homeschool or virtual school. And they said, no. You're going to go to school and you're going to make the most of your senior year. And there's no and if or buts about it. And looking back, I'm actually so grateful that they made me stay there. But there was no prom. I mean, I missed out on a lot.
Yeah. So, how about the father of the child? One of the things that I know have happened in the past, a girl is pregnant, and then I've seen this happen even in Christian schools, she's asked to leave. They don't want to have to deal with the kind of dynamic that you described in your public school. But the father of the child kind of gets away with it because, number one, he's not visibly getting bigger as time goes on. He may not even be claiming the child. Was this person involved with the decision and that he would consider parenting alongside with you, even though you were still living in your parents' home?
So he was a little bit older, just by a few years, but already out of high school. So no issues as far as him running into the school. But I absolutely hear you. And I do see that commonly, that a young man is not punished, so to speak, in the same ways that a young woman is when she becomes pregnant on campus. As far as his reaction and what he had said, I mean, he certainly was not happy. I think he too was kind of like, well, shoot. And but at that time, it was implied that we were going to be together and he was going to stick around and help out as best he could. So nobody was excited, as sad as that is to say. But at that time, he wasn't pushing abortion.
Okay, and you were 17 at the time, correct? So technically, he had engaged in, I don't even know, and I'm from California currently as well. I don't know if statutory rape is still on the books or anything like that, but he could have been, if your parents had wanted to, he could have been charged, correct?
Probably, especially because We had been together at that point for probably 2 years, year and a half, 2 years.
And your
And I
parents
think,
liked him?
no, my parents did not like
Okay.
him. And I don't think they knew that I was seeing him as often as I was, or that, I mean, clearly they had no idea that the relationship was sexual in nature. They would have never agreed to that. You know, there were no boyfriend sleepovers or anything like that. It wasn't like a modern
Okay.
situation.
So, well, I mean, this is part of what I wanted to get into later, but since this is part of the story, let's talk about it. You were the good church girl. I imagine you have brothers and sisters.
I do. I have three older sisters.
Okay. So they're involved in this as well. You're the youngest in the family. Why were you comfortable, if you can remember? Because I realize you're not who you were then, right? But why were you comfortable lying to your parents? Because, like I said, teenage girls will have all sorts of input. Why wasn't the concern? I mean, because you obviously knew that you could get pregnant.
Yeah, I think that for me, looking back, sin started really small and wasn't all-consuming, wasn't as devastating, I will say. So, you know, little white lies, being over at a friend's house when I was really at a different friend's house, or, you know, I was going to go straight to school, but instead I stopped it as I was walking at Starbucks, and then I was 10 minutes late. You know, you just kind of get caught up in lying to your parents, I think, as you enter into your teenage years and you desperately want to become an adult and your own person. And I had the added factor of my parents were older in when they had me. And so they just always felt prudish and far removed and like we were so different and they didn't get me. And they let me have a lot of freedom. I think by the time they had their fourth daughter, they were kind of tired. And they're focus on work and thinking about retirement. And they just kind of thought, like, she'll end up doing well like the rest of them. You know, how bad could things be? We live in a great, safe neighborhood. She's in a great school. We're in church several times a week. And they kind of maybe dropped some of their defenses. And I kind of snuck into those gaps that they created.
How about your older sisters? Were they living at home with you and your parents at the time?
No, they were. At the time I became pregnant, they were already all moved out and into their lives. And they're a lot older than me, so married with children, I think, at that point.
Were you ever concerned about how they would view your activity?
Yes, absolutely. And especially when I became pregnant with my first baby, my older sister had struggled and struggled to conceive, and she had become pregnant shortly before that. And I knew because of her attitude, because she had longed for that child, that me being pregnant was going to absolutely wreck her and wreck our relationship. And it did.
So let's continue the story. You graduate high school. You are living at home with your parents, raising your son
Yes,
and
yes.
his name.
Eli.
So you're raising Eli. I imagine that as time goes on, as most grandparents will, they don't focus on how this child was conceived. He's their grandson.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Okay, so that would be an interesting story. Except your story takes another twist. So
It
share
does.
that if you would.
Yeah. So right after high school, I immediately started at a local university, got accepted, was really excited. Also, as silly as it sounds, was really proud of that because I went from this low, low moment where I felt like I let everyone down to now trying to prove everyone wrong, which is also not right because I'm rooting my identity and being an achiever and shattering statistics and all that I can do in life to make people, including my parents, like me. And things were looking great. But as you know, because you heard the story behind closed doors, you know, in my secret private life, so to speak, nothing had really changed in my heart. I'm still making the same poor decisions. I'm still on and off again with my son's father. And about halfway through my freshman year of college, now 18, a mom living at home, I find out that I'm pregnant again.
Okay, so was the father of number two the same as the father of number one?
He was, and at this point, our relationship had become extremely chaotic. At best, it was young and immature and on and off, but at worst, it was violent. It was not safe. There was multiple addictions. There was infidelity. It was all kinds of crazy that you would not want your daughter or your granddaughter involved in.
Okay, but you're still living at home. It's not like you had moved in with him or got married or anything like that.
For a very brief time, lived together with his family.
Okay.
So it was a lot of dysfunction, you could say.
Did your son stay with your parents or did he come with
Oh,
you?
no. My son always stayed with me.
Okay. So were your parents, and this is important. I mean, I realize you were telling stuff from years ago and stuff,
Sure.
but you present yourself as somebody who really wants to share her story because you think that there are more people like you than everybody would like to believe, right? In the same
Absolutely.
situation. So was there hope on your parents' side that you and this fellow would get married?
Yes, I think so, and hope that I wouldn't end up in any more bad situations, marriage or not, that their daughter was going to learn from this. She had hit rock bottom once before. Surely she would never hit rock bottom twice. Things can only get better. She's bound for greatness, and we're glad our grandchild's here, that she didn't have an abortion, but surely there will be no more mistakes from here on out. She's learned her lesson. She's grown up. She's matured. A lot of trust had been built over the last year or so.
Were they familiar with the fact that you were still sexually involved with this guy?
No, and I think that they kind of perhaps buried their heads in the sand. I hate to say that about my parents.
Well, no, you're looking back on it the same way you're looking back on yourself. It
And
wasn't like, you're going to marry my daughter, so let's get this scheduled.
I think that they wouldn't have said this, but there is probably some part of them, especially my dad, that would accept the mindset of, well, if you're going to do it, be safe.
I see.
Get on birth control, use some type of protection. But now, having worked in this pregnancy center movement for 10 years and obviously being an adult, I can tell you that wasn't the answer. That wasn't the answer I needed to hear, but that was perhaps what my dad was hoping, that I would just, quote, be safe and make better decisions.
As an aside, I was raised Catholic. I went to 13 years of Catholic school. My father was a physician who would not perform abortions, whether it was legal or not. And yet, when I was heading out to college, before I went away, he got everybody else out of the house and he sat down with me and he decided to show me the rhythm method. And it was
Oh my
like,
goodness.
what? So, what was the message there? The message was, don't come back pregnant. Now,
Exactly.
right, that was the message. So I can relate to the idea. At this point, looking back, I'm like, what was he communicating? He was saying, I know, I guess he was saying, you're probably going to do this anyway. And so this is how you do it. And then when you think about anybody who understands the rhythm method, it's, very technical and you have to measure your days of fertility, and it's like, that's probably not how it's going to happen with a college student and
Right.
stuff. I do know that for a lot of people, because I grew up in the 70s and such, there was so much changing that it was easy to say, oh, if we can just get through this, it'll be fine. And so it's not so much we're condemning your father or your mother's attitude. It was like it was typical. That was probably more the norm than anything else.
Oh, absolutely. And I had girlfriends who did not become pregnant, but who, when their parents found out they were sexually active, did not argue with them or try to stop them, but simply took them to the gynecologist or the family physician, rather, and put them on birth control because they adopted what you just said. Well, it's going to happen anyway, so you might as well, quote, be safe, I guess.
And in the early 2000s, because my daughters played golf and I got to know parents, there were parents who actually said, well, I've told them it's okay to come to our house because I would rather they had sex in her room than at a motel, at a sleazy motel. So you get to see how the relaxing of biblical mores has effect all around, so that you're really getting the message that says the worst thing is to have your sin discovered. That's the worst thing. We know you're going to sin. And as a matter of fact, I don't care so much if you sin, but just don't let it be a blot on our family.
Right. And when that happens, cover it up. Oh.
Okay. So let's continue with your story. So you're now in college. You're still connected with this man.
Mm-hmm.
And from my recollection of your talk, you decided this was not something you wanted to stay in. And so you decided you were going to leave.
Yeah. There had been a couple of instances of abuse, of infidelity, things that really came to the surface. And at the same time, going to college, I'm gaining confidence. I'm thinking like, I can do better than this. I've got some, not that I was so full of myself to say I'm going places, but like, I don't have to accept this type of behavior, I guess. Yeah. So I was ready to end it, knowing like my son and I are not safe. Nothing good is going to happen here.
Okay. And then?
And then at the same time, I went back to my parents. I was terrified because now I'm letting them down, explaining, hey, this relationship that I've told you has been good, that you've known was kind of not great the whole time, has really been layered in chaos and abuse and addiction. And I need a safe place to land. My son and I, we need to have a solid system of support. Can we stay here indefinitely? You know, no more back and forth. Me just staying in school, us living here. And my dad was upset that I had lied about how bad the relationship was, upset that his daughter had accepted that type of behavior, but also willing to extend grace. And they let me live there with my son, Eli. And right about the same time, within the same probably 7 to 10 days max of breathing a sigh of relief, of ending this relationship, of staying with my parents, I got some kind of stirring in my stomach. I thought it was anxiety. I took a pregnancy test and I found out that I was pregnant again.
Okay. And this is the part of the story that I really appreciate, in a way that, just as a parent, as someone who remembers what it was like to be a teen, and now as a grandmother, you had this sense that you couldn't bring this news to your parents again. This was the sort of thing like, no, I've already escaped their wrath once. So what were you thinking at that point?
You're exactly right. Not only have I already escaped their wrath once, I felt burdened for them. Like, I've put them through too much. They don't deserve to go down this route with me again. And they've spent a lot of time and money and energy supporting me and the almost one-year-old I have here under their roof. And they don't deserve this. And they don't deserve the shame and embarrassment that will certainly come. And I thought about not just them, but my almost toddler who was counting on me to make it. And I thought about how we'd probably, at least for a time, lose my parents' relationship. Like, they would cut off contact, or at least I thought about my dad kicking us out, because the cardinal rule in his home after he accepted the news of my first pregnancy was, you know, there can't be another one. He basically said, I think his words were, you've exhausted grace. You've exhausted our grace, Rebecca. Yeah, gotta do better. You know, everybody messes up, but not everybody messes up so many times. So get it together, kid. Something like that. And here I was messing up. And when you've rooted your identity in achieving and success, and now you're afraid of people finding out who you really are, the same old person making the same dumb mistakes. I mean, you're just, the enemy attacks you and you're so full of shame. And it's incredible what shame and fear can enable you to do. I mean, you're willing to compromise everything that you believe in to preserve what the world thinks of you, I guess.
Okay. So the first time you said you really weren't abortion minded, but this time you most definitely were.
This time I most definitely was.
So what was your train of thought? And then what did you do?
So at this time, there was really no future that I could see where I kept this baby, not choosing adoption because I'd still have to carry the pregnancy. My dad would still find out, the consequences would still come, and I'd have to place, which would be too emotionally traumatic. And that's how women describe it. You know, women in this position are looking for, I think, finality, and adoption, as beautiful as it is to a scared young person, presents a lot of unknowns. No door fully closes. And that was just out of the question. And I thought about this baby suffering and the child I already had suffering and me suffering. And I thought, abortion is not what I want to do. It's what I have to do. It's the most compassionate adult-like decision I can make right now in this crummy, disastrous situation I've created. And so from that moment, holding that pregnancy test in that drugstore, I didn't pray. I didn't phone a friend. No one wants to hear your sob story twice. I knew what I was doing as a Christian was probably wrong, but I thought God is just going to have to forgive me. And I'd rather face my heavenly father later, knowing he's a good, forgiving father, than face my earthly father now, because he's promised the second time I mess up, he won't be. And so I immediately began searching for a way out through abortion.
So at that point, the abortion pill, as it's called, was available. Or did you already know about it? Or did somebody tell you this is the best way to deal with it?
I had heard about the abortion pill over the years in high school, little bits and pieces here and there. I knew it was different than birth control. I assumed it was different than Plan B or emergency contraception, but I really had no idea how it worked, but that it was super available and accessible in my community.
And so you found where to get it. In other words,
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a quick Google search, and it's even easier now, unfortunately, in modern day. But even then, a quick Google search revealed that I think I had 9 weeks at the time to make the decision. The FDA had approved it through 9 weeks, which told me, okay, the clock's ticking. You better make a decision now. All of these different brick and mortar abortion clinics popped up within about a 30, 35 mile radius of my home, over six, between probably six and 10, right there that I could drive to and end this without anyone ever knowing. And I will never forget reading their tagline was, you know, you can go back to work or school within 48 hours. And I thought, well, this is perfect. Not perfect in the sense that this is easy or what I want to do, but compared to, say, a surgical abortion, this is the easier, less expensive, less invasive, more natural route. And because it was just air quotes, pills, I started to compartmentalize and to really think, well, how bad could this be? Like, I'm just taking a couple of pills. And looking back, I realized that too is how the enemy distorts and deceives, you know, getting you to think, well, it's really not all that bad. And then you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, how did I get here?
Yeah. So this is a touchy subject today within pro-life circles in general, but I'll ask you directly. Did you have a sense as you found a course of action, you were going to do it? In your mind, did you say, I'm about to murder someone?
No.
So that didn't compute. In other words, either you had just decided that I'm not going to think about it. I mean, did you think at the point that life began at conception?
I don't know that I thought that much about it. I don't think that I thought too much about when life began, unfortunately. You know, these aren't conversations we had in our church or in our home. And so that wasn't my thought. I did feel like what I was doing was wrong. I wouldn't have used the term murder, I don't think. I probably could have said or accepted, like, yes, I'm ending a life, but I have to continue my life. And there's no way that this life and my life can exist.
Okay, so you
And so one of
basically
them
made the
has to end.
decision. Your life and Eli's life was more important than this life.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you found a place to go, you went, and what was the process of how they reassured you person to person that this was just going to be just fine and it would be done? Closure, how'd that work?
It was super simple. And I think this would probably shock most parents, especially in places like California, but a lot of states today in 2025, because you can access abortion, including chemical abortion, which is incredibly invasive, under 18 without a parental consent. I was told how to get temporary emergency Medicaid or Medi-Cal to cover it, so my parents would have no idea. And they tell you the same thing you read online. So basically, the elevator pitch or spiel that you get when you get there is this will be really natural, much like your monthly menstrual cycle. You're going to bleed, you're going to cramp. They said if you have blood clots larger than the size of a lemon, go ahead and give us a call. But other than that, you should experience things that are within the realm of normalcy when it comes to a chemical abortion, I guess. And they never say chemical abortion, it's a medication abortion because I think that sounds gentler. And they said, you know, you're going to start this process here today in the clinic. You'll take the first pill, which will just end your pregnancy, known pharmaceutically as mifepristone or RU486. And there's no talk of what does that mean? What does that mean? How do you end a pregnancy? And they know good and well that these scared young people, I mean, I'm 18 at the time, we don't know how to ask that question. I'm not even thinking about how does a pill end a pregnancy until much later. I'm just thinking, okay, check a box. Pill ends pregnancy. Okay, got it. And then she said, when I got home 24 hours later, when I got my son to sleep, when my parents went to sleep, that I would take a second set of four pills called Cytotec or misoprostol, that I would let them dissolve in my cheek, swallow, and that it would just expel my pregnancy. And again, you're kind of nodding and it's all very rushed, and you're like, okay, you know, sign right here. Okay. End pregnancy, expel pregnancy, got it. But then you backtrack and you're like, well, wait a minute, what does that mean that I'm going to expel a pregnancy? Again, a question I didn't think to ask. Young women just think, and I think want to believe, that their baby and their problem just disappears. But it doesn't, and that's not possible. And so what was kept from me was, of course, the way medication abortion really works. And no one is asking you, well, is it a rational thought that your dad is going to kill you? Is it a rational thought that your parents are going to kick you out? What kind of people are they? What's your faith life like? What's your family like? Everybody is just affirming you in your abortion decision and in your sin.
So somewhere along the line, after you've taken the first dose or the first pill, I don't think it was from your story, it was not too long after that that you were like, "What have I done?"
Yep, it was probably a maximum of 2 to 4 minutes after. So you take the first abortion pill and you leave the clinic, and the rest of it you complete on your own. So as I was leaving, I was handed that bag with all of the other drugs, and I got to my car still in that parking lot, and I sat down, and it was just a complete 180, just a complete scales torn off my eyes, now seeing clearly, fog lifts, and you're like, what did I just do? I don't even think I believe in abortion. And I'm a Christian. I have a baby that I love. And you're questioning yourself. You're like, how did fear get the best of me? And I think I said this when I spoke at Real Options, but if I didn't, I'll say it again now, that in that moment, I felt so vulnerable and like I had been deceived by Satan. Like he had been a part of this and the way I was seeing things and the marketing that was put in my path that led me towards this decision. And like I was still being pursued by Satan, now feeling the grief and the shame and the heaviness and the isolation. And I just started to pray, basically crying, literally, and said, God, if there's a way out of this, please help me find it. And if not, God, just please forgive me.
I know the story. Somebody or something led you to what's called the abortion pill reversal protocol. How did that
Yes.
happen?
Looking back, probably say that this is just the Lord and His grace and mercy that I did not deserve. But after praying, I pulled out my phone because that's what we all do. We go to our phones. And I typed in something like, I started a medication abortion and I don't want to finish it. You know, nothing comes up. I took the first abortion pill. I don't want to take the second. And as I'm searching, I realize that, okay, it's not just me. It's not me being irrational and impulsive and flighty. Other women are regretting this decision and knowing that they have to go home and not only facilitate their abortion, end their child's life, but turn their bathrooms, their dorm rooms into a place of trauma that they're going to have to look at forever. That's not sitting well with them. And so I was a little bit relieved to know that I wasn't crazy, but also still determined to try to find an answer. So I finally found a hotline network, then called Abortion Pill Reversal. And the website was abortionpillreversal.com. And it was connected, the 1-800 number was connected to a pregnancy center in California, a medically licensed pregnancy center answered and facilitated by real nurses and real physicians, which we know the other side does not think is the case. And I called while still in that parking lot of the abortion facility. And I talked to a nurse and I said, I have messed up. I saw your ad that said, if you've taken the first abortion pill and are having doubts, to call us. And so here I am calling you and I don't know what to do. And in that moment, she was the only person who didn't just co-sign on my sin. You know, she really talked to me like an adult, because I was 18, and like I wasn't beneath her, and like abortion wasn't my only option.
This is the part of your story that I absolutely love. I don't know if you remember the name of this woman or not.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
I guess you do. But when you expressed that she had listened to you and she was like, it wasn't like, you've done wrong, come in here immediately. First of all, she knew that if you had just taken these pills, you had some time before you were going to take the second one anyway. And I love the part where you say to her, my dad's going to kill me. My dad's going to kill me.
Yep.
And instead of giving you some sort of, I don't know, religious answer, for lack of a better term, she says, well, has your dad ever killed anyone? And you said, no, I would be the first. And it made it just such, I think, I don't know if you started laughing at that point or whatever, but she just took all this pressure off by asking you to really think this through. Was your dad actually going to kill you?
Right. And she was the perfect person to answer that phone. Her name is Nurse Debbie. And still to this day, I have a relationship with Nurse Debbie. And I can still hear her voice in that phone call because she's chipper and she's a delight. And she's one of those people that isn't going to do the thinking for you, but she is going to call you into wisdom by asking questions like that. And it was like an epiphany, like a light went off. And I was like, oh my gosh, no, he's not. He's not going to kill me. That would be so out of character. But the things that you think when you're so afraid and you're young and believe the world is ending.
Yeah. So we'll fast forward the clock. You were able to reverse the first dose. And what they do is I have interviewed Dr. Delgado, who is one
yes.
of the people who had pioneered this. They just flood your system with progesterone, which is the pregnancy hormone that helps your body hang on to the baby. And since I'm talking to you, we know your father did not kill you.
Praise God.
Yeah. But I'm sure that the whole discussion thereafter wasn't easy. It's not like now you make the right decision to not go ahead and kill your child. You still have the difficult situation ahead of you of communicating what's been happening.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right.
And so what's the second child's name? Because he survived.
He did. Yes. So this was very early on in Dr. Delgado's practice. It was his clinic that answered my call. I stayed on that progesterone for several weeks and carried to term. And on October 20th of that year, I gave birth to another little boy who I named Zachariah. And we call him Zach these days because he's older and cool. But his name that I gave him means the Lord remembers, because
yeah.
when I looked back at this whole journey and my bad attempt to take control away from God, that we all do at times in different ways, and how God still intervened and prevailed, I saw his goodness and his grace and his fingerprints all over his story. And so I think Zach's incredible. He's healthy. He's thriving. And since then, there have been over 7,000 other babies saved by the same progesterone-based abortion pill reversal regimen.
Yeah. And what most people don't realize is if you were to ask the folks who gave you the first dose and then gave you that little brown bag, they would tell you this is a fait accompli. I mean, there's no way. You have to continue it. And you also brought up that they send people back home to their dorm rooms. Sometimes they even suggest people go to a hotel. And you think about it, people are flushing the remains of human beings down the toilet.
Yeah.
Aside from the horrific nature of that, what does that say about our groundwater?
It's
Aborted
frightening.
children and they're flushed down the sewer system. It's judgment. A society that has said it's okay to kill your child is going to reap what it's sown.
Absolutely.
So let's fast forward the clock again. You currently are the mother of four children. You got married. I take it wasn't to the original guy.
No,
Okay.
I married my husband. His name's Kramer, and yes.
Okay. So was it hard for him to accept your past? And, or in other words, it's like nobody will want me now because I'm a single mother of two children. What was that like?
That was absolutely what I thought, and one of the thoughts that drove me and a lot of women, whether they want to admit it or not, to abortion. And it's funny because we live in kind of a feminist society where they'll say, I don't need a man, yada yada. And then when they're in this predicament, they'll say things like, no man will ever love me and want to be with me. And it just shows you how much we do long to be loved and cared for by a man. And so when I met my husband, Kramer, he's kind of a unicorn. I mean, he's not perfect by any means, no person is, but he, I think, was handpicked by God for this situation. He did not mind, this story being part of my past. He loves the boys like they are his own. And yesterday we found out that our adoption has been approved. So we're just waiting for California's stamp of approval, and he will be adopting our oldest children. And he doesn't, treat them any different than the two that we have together. And so it's been a really great experience. There have been ups and downs because of the sin that I brought into my life, but as far as him coming in has been really a blessing.
Some people would look at that and say, God did wonderful things there. Like you said, it's not a fairy tale situation. You have ups and downs, as all marriages do. But now there's the step where you're going to go public and you're going to be a quote unquote pro-life speaker. And now everybody and his brother who sits in attendance at one of these things knows all about you. What was the hurdle for you to then share this story with people? And what was the hurdle for your husband and even your children that mom's going around, my wife's going around telling everybody about her past? Was that a thing that had to be negotiated?
That's a really good question, and no one's ever asked me that before. I really appreciate you asking. So I started speaking long before I met my husband. I started speaking when I was still in college. It was probably 2015 when I gave my first speech, and I think I was 20 at the time. And at the time, I didn't realize that this would be something I did for so long, that this would become a full-time ministry. I just was approached by a pregnancy center, and I thought, well, pregnancy centers have done so much for me. Of course, I want to give back. Of course. And yes, it felt vulnerable, and yes, it felt weird, but because I thought it was so one-off and I'd never see these people again and nothing would ever come of it, I didn't think about the long-term effects. And then one turned into two, and two turned into four, and four turned into 10. And here we are 10 years later, still doing it. And there were times where I would think about that. And people do know really messy, intimate parts of my life. And that is uncomfortable when you're speaking to a church population because you don't know what they're thinking. But also when you know that your stories say online and you're going to have negative feedback from people who don't agree with you. And they want to comment on everything from your choices to your looks to your, whatever. But all that to say, I think there are so many people silently struggling with sin, sexual sin, the sin of abortion. And because it's not talked about, because it's deemed too taboo, they're not healing from past decisions. They're walking actively into sin to try to cover up and preserve that identity that we talked about earlier. And so I'm like, if me being a little bit vulnerable and awkward helps, then it's worth it.
I understand that motivation. You were helped by people, you wanted to give back, you're grateful. Was it hard for your husband to accept this is what you do? And then, of course, your children now, the two boys, are old enough. It's not, I know a lot of parents, for specifically women, but who will not tell their children that they had abortions. And I said, why wouldn't you tell your children this? Well, I don't want them to think it's okay to do what I did. Meanwhile, these people are Christian, saying that they've been forgiven. This is your testimony. This is like an amazing thing to communicate how God has forgiven you very grievous activities. But then again, as kids grow and people hear your story, whatever it is, it's going to affect them. What's it like for your boys to know that mom's out there talking about how they might not have made it because she might have made a bad decision and not had them live?
So to answer the first part of your question, did it bother my husband or was he concerned about it? No, I think that's one of the things my husband was drawn to. And he's got a political leaning to him. He's interested in these types of topics. And so I think that there was some admiration there. His parents are pastors. He's used to people kind of sharing about their
Sure.
family and things like that. So that was kind of normal for him. When it came to the kids, that didn't become a concern until they were older. Reason being, when I would speak, and I was a single mom, they were young, I would take them. So they grew up going to pregnancy center banquets, but they were so young, everything went over their head. They just, were playing with their fork, and it didn't ever stick, which was a blessing because I thought by the time they're old enough to understand, I maybe won't be doing this and we won't ever have to have that conversation. And then the Lord had other plans. So it started really small and in, I would say, age appropriate ways. And so after an event one time when they were about 6 and 7, maybe 7 and 8, they asked me a question. And it was something to the effect of, well, what did you mean Papa was going to kill you when he found out you were pregnant with me? And I was like, oh, they're listening. Okay, here we go. And so at that time, it was, well, sometimes when moms are pregnant, they're scared and they need help. And so I was really scared. I didn't know what would happen. And of course, Papa wasn't really going to kill me. But sometimes when we get scared, we do think crazy things. Like when you do something bad, you think, oh my gosh, my mom's going to hate me, or my mom's going to kick me out of the house and I'll have to live in the backyard. But you know that those aren't true rational thoughts. And so kind of bringing it down to a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old level. And then as they got older, it was, okay, a 9, 10, 11-year-old level where they're hearing from their peers about abortion and they're watching on the news and other channels, political campaigns and commercials. I mean, it's everywhere, even when they're very young. And so, okay, when mom was scared and when a lot of women are scared, they consider abortion not because we didn't love you, but because we were so fearful of the life that you would have, of the life that we all would have. And I always made sure to tell him, especially my second, this had nothing to do with you and me not wanting you. This was me being so caught up and fearful that I couldn't see light at the end of the tunnel. And then always kind of coming in with, and everyone makes mistakes. And I think as they've gotten older and they're into their teenage years now, that this has created, at least I hope, an environment where they're going to be willing to come with to me when they mess up. And to know that we are a family who extends grace and second and third and fourth and fifth chances, and we help people, and that's what God has asked of us as believers, and that's what God grants to us is grace and mercy. And so I think that that's helped them.
Yeah. This next question really sticks with me because a lot of times you're not the only one and you weren't built this way. I know Abby Johnson, when I've heard her talk, I don't know if she still says it this way, talks about an unexpected pregnancy. And to me, that kind of sounds euphemistic, right? Because it kind of takes the sting off of it. To even have to consider abortion, there are downstream issues that have not been confronted. So, would you say, rather than parents approaching their children and saying, hey, don't get pregnant or don't have sex or something like that, which then makes the fact that chastity, waiting till marriage, sounds like, as opposed to, it's a beautiful thing. And right. God's law is there to bless you, not to just kill all the joy in your life or whatever. Looking back, if you could write the script and go prior to your pregnancy, what would you say to your parents, or what would you think your parents could have said or done ahead of time that might be encouraging to parents today, especially if their children are in public school? They know they're not getting the message of you should wait. They're getting a more direct version of, if you don't want to get pregnant, this is how not to do it. Not like, whatever you do, don't get pregnant, which is kind of how parents sometimes will come across. What would you say? Because I'm sure there are people here, I hope there are, who are going, have I really squared this away with my kids? I mean, they're good kids. I mean, I'm sure your parents would have said you were a good kid. So what would you say?
I love this question too. I think this is shaping up to be probably my favorite interview ever. And I completely agree with you. I think it's almost silly to say unwanted or unplanned pregnancy. When I think about life before I got pregnant, what my parents should have done, and again, they would admit this now, but they didn't have the tools or the words or the resources to even know this, is get ahead of this when I was young, have frequent small conversations that were age appropriate, but to always come back to what you said, which is sex is a gift that God has given you, and it is best enjoyed within the context of marriage, because that's when you're safe from all sorts of things, safe physically from sexually transmitted diseases, safe enough to bring a baby into this world. Your body was designed to create life. And so when you have sex, you're literally telling your body to get pregnant. And when you become pregnant, I mean, ideally, that's a thing that you should celebrate, because it's a sign that you're reproductive system is working and doing exactly what you asked it to do. But everything is so disconnected and compartmentalized, and we just throw a patch or a pill and we just say, you know, don't get caught. And it's crazy. And so I think that is where the disconnect happened. There were no conversations about sex. Sex was awkward and it was taboo, and they didn't know how to talk about it. And they just thought, if we don't talk about it, our kids aren't doing it. And boy, were they wrong. And I would have loved to have heard that, yes, sex is a gift. It is enjoyed best in monogamy, in marriage. And it is designed that way because having and engaging in a sexual relationship outside of those boundaries creates heartbreak and pain and situations that God never wanted you to experience. God never wanted you to know what it was like to be a single mom, to be heartbroken because your partner left and now you've got these broken soul ties with all these different people. I would have loved to have heard about the bonding chemicals in the brain and in the body, like dopamine and vasopressin and oxytocin. I mean, these things that are just incredible that young people have no idea about. They're just almost like walking into these situations blind, you know?
Right.
And I think that that would have helped a lot. And then if I could encourage parents, I've been saying this a lot lately, so you didn't quite ask, but I am going to say it. One thing I think that they could have done when they having some conversations with me, not about sex, but they talked a lot to me about drunk driving. I don't know why, but that was kind of their thing. And they always said, as stern and as old and as strict as they were, if you ever get drunk at a party, call us. Just call us. You're not going to be grounded. You're not going to be in trouble. We're going to pick you up and there's going to be no questions asked. We're just going to put you in your bed and there'll be no consequences. It is so much better to call us when you end up in that situation than to attempt to drive a car. And I think that parents can do the exact same with the sex/pregnancy conversation. It's, look, this is not what I want for you. This is very dangerous. This is not what God wants for you. You should not engage in this. But goodness gracious, if you do, and if you become pregnant, please come tell me. We'll get through this together. You're not going to be in trouble. We're not going to shame you. We just want you to be safe. We don't want you to make any bad choices while you're not thinking clearly. It's, to me, the same type of conversation.
Yeah. And I think this goes back to a theological absence in most Christian homes and sadly in a lot of Christian churches. You were more afraid of your father than you were afraid of God. And of course, the fear of God, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So from the time children are young, whoever's listening, that their children are at whatever stage, this must be communicated because, yes, God is a forgiving God, but willfully sinning. I mean, your theology was terrible. God will forgive me, but I'd rather have to deal with him later. We're always dealing with God. And so if children understand that nothing is done in secret, I mean, you could hide things from your dad, you could hide things from your mom, but God knew exactly what you were doing. I just heard you say it, when you got into the car, it's like the scales came off your eyes. Satan had accomplished his mission. You were starting the process of murdering a child. Mm-hmm. This is not a new thing for Satan. Think back in the Egyptians telling the Hebrews they had to throw their babies in the water, or Herod going after all the children under two. This is not new. But at the point at which you came to realize that, that was the intervention of God. Satan no longer cared about you at that point. He had accomplished his mission. Just like I tell my students, it's not like when Satan approached to Adam and Eve, he really cared about their future. He did not. His assault was on God's image bearers. And sadly, the Planned Parenthoods, the abortion providers, these are assaults on God's image bearers. And so past what you thought intellectually or whatever, God was with you because Eli and Zach were supposed to live. And I think we need to have a theological basis that says we trust that what God tells us to do is right and good and for our benefit, but not make it that the law of God is this bat that keeps hitting you on the head. It's more like a bouquet of flowers or a wonderful banquet. It's not to oppress you. And it's Satan's lies that make people think, yeah, I know. My parents just don't want me to have any fun. You're a testimony to the fact that your actions didn't produce fun.
Amen. Absolutely.
All right. So there may be people who want to get in touch with you or want to know more about what you do or have you speak to their group. How would they get in touch with you?
Online is probably best. And then from there, you could shoot me an email. My website is RebeccaHagan.org. And my email address is Becky@RebeccaHagan.org. And from there, I'm happy to get on a call or I'll talk to anybody. Even if you've got a young lady in your life, I talk to teenagers frequently. So, but that's okay. A good place to start.
Just because there's a couple of ways to spell Rebecca, yours is with the K and ends with the H, correct?
Correct.
Well, thank you so much. When I sat there, and it was in early November, as I said, and heard you speak, to be honest with you, I'd never heard of you before. And it's kind of like, okay, I sat through a lot of keynote speakers. Some were better than others or whatever. I mean, I don't know how everybody else reacted. You know, when you're up on stage, you can see people's faces. All I knew was that I was in this group of one girl here, one girl here. And I could see they were so connected. And I thought, even your mistakes, God has redeemed to glorify him and further his kingdom. And I'm just so happy that not only I heard you, but that I've gotten to know you.
Well, thank you. And it's been great getting to know you. And I'm so glad that your granddaughters were there.
Yes. Yes, indeed. All right, folks, let us know what you think about our conversation today or other things you'd like us to talk about. outofthequestionpodcast@gmail.com is how you reach us. And we'll talk with you next time.
Thanks for listening to Out of the Question. For more information on this and other topics, please visit chalcedon.edu.